Becoming Something New was the task set by lecturer Dave Lorden in early January as part of Planet Cabaret, our creative writing course here on Arena. The course, which we launched in December, runs on the first Tuesday of every month. Dave comes into studio to give help and advice to anyone who thinks that they'd like to write. At the end of the course, we'll be picking the best entries to include in a new collection, which New Island Books will publish later this year. This evening, Dave is joined by crime writer Arlene Hunt, and we also have somebody to read some collections for us, or selections for it as well. Dylan Tye is here. And this we'll be giving you the guidance and the task for next Friday. First of all, Dave, huge number of entries, I believe, for this month, and you've drawn up a shortlist. Remind us of what you were looking for, first of all.
The challenge was to ask people to imagine their characters undergoing an extreme transformation, becoming something new. So it was quite a challenging task that I gave people, and people responded very well to the challenge. We had 140 entries altogether. Which is quite a lot of entries. Entries came from all over the world, all over Ireland, and people came at it from all different angles. So it was great to see the entries that we got. Yeah,
let's go through some of the ones then that stood out for you. Kate Dempsey. Let's listen to Kate Dempsey's story first, actually, read by Sarah Kenny.
Yesterday, I finished the last poem for my new collection. I'd been tinkering with it for close on 4 days. It's an absolute cracker. The Japanese film crew who'd been filming me for the past 6 months was delighted. It was rounds of sake and later a firework display worthy of a royal birth. I sent it on first to Stephen Hawking and he gave it the thumbs up. Obama said it gave him the shivers and Catherine Bigelow is begging me for the film rights. I'll debut it tomorrow at my Legion of Honour ceremony at the Elysee Palace. The president was very insistent that I don't cancel my appearance again. And I said, Francois, you're pushing through the gay marriage legislation. It's the least I can do.
So, Kenny reading Kate Dempsey's story there for us, one of our shortlisted entries for this month's Planet Cabaret. Why did you choose that particular piece, Dave?
I think one of the roles of writers is to be subversive. And satire is the most subversive mode of writing. And one of the people we should be most subversive and satirical towards is ourselves, one of the groups of people. And this is a satire on the narcissistic excesses of contemporary writers and the great massive, plans that we have for ourselves and the massive beliefs that we have in our little poems and how the writer's head expands and expands and expands and, you know, the limitless ego of the writer. I think it was written very well. It was read very well as well in that deadpan way. And we all know writers like that. And every writer has got a little piece of that in them. So it was good to see Kate hopping the ball back at us like that quite well, I thought. So congratulations for that. I really enjoyed this piece, you know.
All right, I said Dylan, I got that bit right. Dylan McDonough is in studio with us this evening and he's going to read some of the entries as well. And one of the first pieces that Dylan's going to read for us, Dave, is by Patrick O'Flaherty. Just tell us who Patrick O'Flaherty is.
I don't know who Patrick O'Flaherty is. This piece of work is called Feathered Apes. And again, it relates to the challenge of becoming something new. This has got to do with crows.
Heard a story about a local farmer in the 80s. It was a bad winter. The farmer went to feed his cattle and slipped on the ice. They reckon he'd a heart attack. Don't know if he got it before or after the fall. But they know he landed on his back. Never got up. Died there in the frozen grass. Green Wellington boots pointing to the blue sky. A neighbour found him the next day. The crows had taken his eyes.
Dylan McDonough reading the work of Patrick O'Flaherty. It certainly stops you, doesn't it?
Yeah, a piece of Irish magic realism with a Hitchcockian horror twist to it. And the reason I chose this, you know, is because of the conversational style and the clipped sentences and the direct address to the reader. We get the sense of the character from how he speaks. We don't need the character to be described for us. And with a lot of the best writers, we come away from their books knowing who their characters are, but they've never been physically described from us. We know them through their speech. So this is a very good example of a writer getting across a whole sense of character just by the way the character speaks to us, their direct address.
And we're getting just sections of these.
Oh, absolutely.
Short
people are sending in their 700 words, as they've been asked to do. 700 words is the word limit. And then I'm just picking out a little paragraph from each of the pieces. When we're getting a lot of good entries and we want to broadcast as many as we possibly can. So we're clipping, you know, we're excerpting, yeah, in order to include people. Yeah.
Emma Dunn wrote a story called Echo. Why did you choose this one before we hear it?
Emma Dunn is a very good example of a simple lyrical transformation taking place. It's written in the present tense, okay? And one of the things that happens when you write well in the present tense is that you bring the reader into the present moment with the character, and our own consciousness almost links in or sags into the consciousness of the character. It's very good writing in the sense that it's not overburdened with detail. One thing that beginner writers have to do, they have to watch out for cluttering their sentences with adverbs and adjectives, to be very careful about your adverbs and adjectives. This is a good example of the careful use of language to build up a sense of character. Simple lyrical piece of writing, really enjoyed it.
The story is called Echo, read once again by Sarah Kenny.
In the hallway, I open the cupboard. Beside the dusty radio is a pair of muddy wellies. Behind it, three more. I take the ones beside it and pull them on. I zip up my jacket, put my fingerless gloves on, and close the cupboard. I breathe deeply. I walk to the front door and slowly open it, my eyes closed. The door wide, I breathe deeply again. My eyes fly open. The brown, the green, the sky, the sky, the sky. My mouth opens, the world expands, and at its tiny, tiny centre, I call.
You've mentioned a number of times, Div, about how important it is to remember that you are writing for radio here,
yes,
as well. Does that piece manifest that in a particular way for you?
Yes, it does, because again, it's full of the sounds and the sights and the physical and sensual experience of the character. And I like radio writing. I think it's very important in radio writing to transmit the sensual experience of the characters using sights and sounds and so on. So it did that very, very well, I thought, yeah.
All right, let's move on to another piece that we're going to hear then. Rob Doyle made the shortlist, and Dylan is going to read a section from a story called The Manhattan Cycle.
Very soon after she made this decision, however, calamity strikes. The woman dies in that most urban mythic of manners. She falls down an elevator shaft, the one she takes every day to and from her apartment. The door opens and, fumbling in her purse, she fails to notice that there is no lift, only dark space inside the door. Eerily, there is no scream of terror as she plunges down the shaft, only a rapid series of bangs followed by an unequivocal metallic slam. We gaze, then, for a long moment, into the void of the open elevator door, which now strikes us as the mouth of hell, or simply of death.
Dylan McDonough reading The Manhattan Cycle, or from The Manhattan Cycle there, from Rob Doyle was the writer. When I heard the phrase there, the woman dies from that most urban mythic of manners, I wondered, was that a mistake? And then I thought, it sort of works when we hear about the lift shaft.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what sort of mistakes did people make this month?
Well, I think the usual mistakes that people make is that they clutter, as I said, with adverbs and adverbs, and they're too verbose. Maybe they're a little bit nervous about trying to get across.
Did Rob get away with it there, though?
Rob got away with it, I think, because he's using a phrase which I haven't seen used before, okay?
It's not a cliche.
And another thing you have to do is you have to cliche-proof your writing. And cliches can come true in terms of phrases. They can also come true in terms of themes and narratives. And this one was very well cliche-proofed. This was actually, you know, the closest to there was a lot of sex in this piece, okay, and I got a lot of sort of 50 Shades of Grey or 50 Shades of Grey stones, as they say down where I live, because of the prompt becoming something new, and this one was a cut above because it had a twist. And this one relates to a woman whose husband dies. They've been in a loyal, faithful relationship. She discovers that he's been cheating, okay, all the time, with having hundreds of affairs, and she takes revenge on him beyond the grave by doing the same thing. And that's what the story is about. And then it relates to those deep things. So it was about that sort of, it had a lot of sexual display in it, a lot of flagrant sexual conduct, but it wasn't simply about that. It deepened it a little bit. And I like writing which operates within the culture that we're all, you know, the trend towards that type of writing, but takes it on and brings it up to another level. So I really enjoyed it.
The last story that you've chosen for us to listen to this evening, Dave, is from Gerdin Creed, and it's called On Tashairi. Let's listen to Sarah Kenny reading from that.
My name is Maka, daughter of Sanri Makimba, and I didn't just decide to come back from the dead, I was driven to it. Don't get me wrong, I'm not against change. I've been involved in upheaval all my life, but the racket that started around here last June, well, that was the last straw. And when the digging monsters left, people in sleek cages on wheels came to drown out the birdsong. I could have put up with all that. Indeed, in my time as a warrior, I suffered far worse. A and if they'd just left my tree alone, things may have turned out better. But Angela and John McMahon, number 31 Kilmurry Close, wanted a kitchen extension and patio, so they ripped out the roots of my sprawling yew and hacked its body to bits.
Once again, then, that was Sir Kilkenny reading from the writing of Geraldine Creed on Taish Éire or the Resurrection. So, good quality entries again. Are the entry qualities improving?
The entry qualities are definitely improving, and we've had a continuation in the sense that some people who entered in the first month also entered in the second month and improved. We're also getting back feedback from people and letters in from people who are taking part, but they don't want to put in their writing into the competition. So, as we said, that's really part of what we're doing as well. Yeah. You know, do the prompt. You don't have to send it in. Just do it to enjoy yourself.
One of the things we're thinking of doing next month is perhaps choosing a couple that we're going to get to do a second draft, so we'll hear a first draft and a second draft next month.
Exactly.
So we're looking at that. All right. Also with us in studio this evening, crime novelist Arlene Hunt. Arlene, people hear crime novel, crime writing, that's where all the sales are nowadays, and I have to start writing right now and I'm going to make a fortune. Is it that easy?
No, it's not. You're right about the fact that there's an awful lot more people writing now. But paradoxically, the more people that are writing, the more the money is actually going down. People are getting less advances. People are not willing to buy books anymore that might cost more money, because I suppose with the monopoly of Amazon and the fact that people are now starting to self-publish in huge numbers. You can buy books for 99 cents. And I'm not saying they're the best books in the world, but you can buy them for 99 cents. And it is kind of saturating the market slightly.
Right. Okay, then. So what do you want? What do you have to do if you want to start? If crime writing is a genre that you want to write in, what's the first bit of advice you would give?
The first thing I would say to anyone starting crime writing fiction or writing crime fiction is enjoy the genre. Enjoy the actual, the physical sitting down and reading a crime book. If that's what you like to read, then the chances of you writing a good crime book are higher automatically. You know, you have to understand that crime fiction in and of itself has got sort of very specific kind of angles, and it's not literary crime generally. It's got a very tight kind of margin. You can get it wrong very easily. I would just say, you know, really enjoy the genre more than anything else. Read.
So that's the first point.
Sure.
Okay, and a few specific points then that people might go for. Character, how important, and where do you start with that?
I would take in two things, and I generally say this, that, you know, I think of it in terms of a car. It's the best analogy I have in terms of a car. Your plot is the engine, but your wheels are the characters. You can't do one without the other. You really can't. You can't drive the book forward if the wheels don't work. And, you know, you really need to concentrate on both of those things. You have to have a good story, of course. But, I mean, if the plot's not good, you're not interested to carry on reading. But if you don't care about the characters, again, you're not interested in carrying on reading either. So you need to work on both of those things. You have to have a good, tight plot for crime, but you have to care about the characters. You have to have something you're rooting for.
And do you need that plot sorted out from the very beginning before you put a word on the page?
No, I find most people don't know what's going to happen in the central section of a book. Most people have an idea how a book opens, and they've built it up in their head. They're going to have a pow kind of opening, really strong, really visual, really reels you in straight away. Well, that's what you hope for. And generally, writers have an idea how the book is going to end. They have the climax in mind. The problem then therein lies with the centre of the book. You don't want to lose the impetus. You don't want to lose the speed. You don't want to suddenly lose your reader and get bogged down in technicalities. And you know, maybe lose your train of thought slightly.
I suppose more so in crime writing and crime procedurals more,
sure.
Even more so. How much research do you need to do? Do you need to know how it actually happens in the real crime world?
You have a lot of license. You need a lot of license as well, because if you were to describe it in genuinely procedural terms, it would be very dull. It would be incredibly dull. Hello, we sent a load of people out. They asked a lot of questions. Did you know the man? No, you didn't. Let me go next door and ask the same question. That would be very boring after a while. I mean, it was Colin Dexter, I think, who they asked Colin Dexter when he was doing the Inspector Morse books, you know, how much research did you do? And he went, I don't do any research. I make it up. And that just sums it up beautifully. You know, he just makes it up. It's fiction.
Dave has already spoken in general terms about the importance of avoiding, you know, cliches and flowery language. Is that even more so there in the case of genre fiction and crime fiction, do you think?
If you have an opening scene of some sort of energy, the last thing you want to do is bog down that scene with a lot of adjectives. You don't want to slow it down with a lot. And another thing which I find, I'm just reading a lot of manuscripts at the moment, is if you have a lot of secondary, third characters. We don't need to know a lot about them. We don't need to have a huge backstory on every single person that your main protagonist meets. So I don't need to know what they had for their lunch. I don't need to know what they had for their dinner. Unless it's moving the story along, there isn't really the need to put it in there. You know, you want to care about your main characters. And it's one of those things that slow the narrative down incredibly. But in terms of language, certainly, if you go over the top and everything is like, you know, soft silk, gravel that's crunchy and blah. You know, everyone knows what gravel sounds like. And it's just this thing that people do, and it's a confidence issue, yeah. You know, that you feel, yeah. My God, they won't know what gravel sounds like. So you explain it over and over again. And it's just one of those things, it can slow things down very, very, very quickly.
Very solid advice. And if people want to read some crime fiction, they can start with your book, The Chosen, I suppose, because they'll see exactly what you're just talking about. So, Dave, this month's task then, what have we set? Hard 700 words on crime fiction, I would think.
Well, this month's prompt is called The Excuse, and even the greatest of criminals has their excuses. We're asking you to come up with the perfect excuse for a terrible crime. The excuse has to be good enough to help absolve your character of the crime. The more heinous the crime, the better the excuse will have to be, and the more challenging and interesting this exercise becomes. Write up to 700 words for your excuse in the first person. Imagine your character attempting to convince us, or a judge and jury, or a god, or whoever you choose, that they were right to do what they did, that they had no choice, that it will be the best for us all in the long run, that there was no other way, etc. Remember that there are many different types of crimes, many different types of criminals, and many different kinds of excuses. Make yours different. Don't go for the obvious choices. Make yours the best excuse for the worst crime you can think of.
I'm excited already. What's the closing date?
February the 28th, Sean.
February the 20th.
And we'll be on the first Tuesday of March again.
Yeah. All right. Find all the details of this month's prompt on our own website, rte.ie/radio1/arena, or on davelordenwriter.com. And Dave will be back with us on Tuesday the 5th of March to hear about the best excuses for the worst crimes possible.